Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter
at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream.
Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Network. Welcome. Another Sunday. I am happy to be live this week. I want to apologize to anybody who tuned in last week for our live show. I changed the show from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. and then had a conflict and had to be at a speaking engagement last Sunday. So I pre-recorded the show, and it was supposed to play live, and we couldn't get it to upload. Just, you know, normal technical stuff that you go through in radio. So I'm still working on getting that uploaded and working with Blog Talk to get that corrected. So as soon as I can, I'm going to add a show probably on a Thursday, hopefully in the next week, maybe this Thursday if I can make it happen by then, and we'll play that show for everyone. It was a great show with Terry Marie. She's called the Angel Lady, and she was she did some readings for us, and it was a really great show. Talked a lot about the angels and angel experiences and things like that. So it's a great show to catch. But I will be sending out lots of tweets and Facebook posts and LinkedIn posts and things of that sort when that show is ready to be played, so you can know what time you can listen to that. Anyway, again, my name is Lisa Tarvis. I am your host, and you're listening to Just Believe Radio on the Right Stream Network. I am a metaphysician. I'm a board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, an author of the book Just Believe, and a radio show host. Each Sunday now, our show airs at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we have different guests who cover lots of different topics, experts in the field of spirituality, holistic health, metaphysics, the paranormal, anything basically under the metaphysics or spirituality on the umbrella. If you happen to be an expert or know of an expert in one of those areas and want to be a guest on the show, please feel free to send me an email. My email address is lisa@lisatarvis, that's lisatarves.com, lisa@lisatarvis.com. So a couple other things I want to just mention is, again, we are growing the Right Stream Network like crazy. Daria DiGiovanni, who is the founder of the show, and myself, along with our other hosts of our other shows, are working real hard to get this network, get some great shows on this network. Currently, we have my show on Sunday, Just Believe. We have Monday's Military Monday. We have, Tuesday's Right Stream Tuesday. Wednesday, we have the Family Power Hour. And very soon, I'm very excited about a show that's called, I think maybe the show dropped. Oh, wait, we're back. Okay. Sorry, we had another technical glitch. Anyway, so starting on November 29th, we're adding a Friday show. So we'll have a Sunday show, which is my show, Just Believe, a Monday show, Military Monday with John D. Gresham. We have Daria DiGiovanni, who does Right Stream Tuesday on Tuesdays, and then Wednesdays we have the Family Power Hour. They're all great shows. Starting on Friday, November 29th, we're going to be starting a new show, launching a new show called Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss is going to be on Fridays at 7 p.m., and we're going to cover lots of women's issues. It's going to be a really fun show where we're hoping to just get together, the girls at the end of the week kind of thing, and I'm going to be a co-host. Daria DiGiovanni is going to be a co-host, and Kristen Fetterman, my daughter, is also going to be a co-host on that show. So it's going to be the three of us, different ages and different perspectives, sitting down and talking about things like relationships, love, you know, love, relationships and marriage and, you know, working, being working women, working parents, things like that. We're going to talk about health and wellness subjects, you know, skincare, makeup, fashion, all this kind of stuff that girls like to talk about. So we're encouraging everybody, grab a glass of wine, grab a cup of tea, and come sit down with us on Fridays at 7 o'clock and listen to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. You can find out about all of our shows on the RightStream Network by going to www.rightstreamradio.com. That's W-R-I-T-E, stream, S-T-R-E-A-M, radio.com. So it's rightstreamradio.com. And you, there's all information on each of us as hosts that host our own shows and each of our shows that we have right now launched. So we're looking forward to growing the network. We're going to be adding some shows in the next few months, and we're really looking forward to getting some really, really, some more fantastic shows on our network. So I think that's all the business that I needed to talk about. So I want to introduce my guest for today. I think this is going to be a little different. You know, you guys are used to listening to me and having psychics on, and I do a lot of online, readings and things like that. Please still feel free to call in if you have questions. This is not that type of show this week. Every week I don't do that type of show, but I do them often. This week we're talking to Glenda Lee Hoffman, who is fascinating. She's an author, and I'm going to just read her bio as it is so I don't completely destroy it. And So Glenda Lee Hoffman, as a young child in a turbulent home, Glenda Lee Hoffman had a series of mystical experiences that fueled her desire to understand, to pursue truth in a way that others did not, to see things that others never perceived, and look at things with a discerning and inquiring mind that yearned to touch a cosmic awareness that brought peace, serenity, and wholeness. It was in a contemplative community called the Christ Circle in Boulder Creek, California, that Glenda Lee first encountered the Kabbalah, an ancient teaching of coded interpretations embedded in the original text of Genesis. In 1973, Hoffman began her studies of the cipher of Genesis, the original code of Kabbalah, as applied to the scriptures by French author Sarah. I'm going to completely ruin this name, I'm sure, but I think it's Carlos C. Sours. I don't know. It's French. I got a D in French. Anyway, by reading Suar's whatever book dozens of times, Hoffman began to develop her own technique, seeing patterns unfold that were seeming clues to a greater knowledge. She focused on specific phrases that described the attributes of the Hebrew letters, not as linguistic components, but as patterns of energy. This method allowed her brain to accumulate a vast library of information about the patterns of energy, which Suar's, I got to learn how to pronounce that, Suar, I don't know, attributes to the Hebrew letters when viewed as elements of the code of Kabbalah. It became clear to Hoffman that the letters formed a complex code of information about fundamental properties of energy at the heart of all life in the universe. She also realized this information represented a revelation that pertains to the human brain that was historically understood and experienced by Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and others. And today we'll talk about what she discovered and has written about her groundbreaking book, The Genesis Code, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. So I would like to welcome Glenda Lee Hoffman to the show. Glenda Lee, are you there?
Hi, Lisa. I'm here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so happy you could be on the show, and I like doing something a little deeper every once in a while. Not that, you know, I mean, we have so much fun when we do our reading shows and when we have our paranormal shows and all of that, but there are some really great spiritual subjects out there that I feel we you know, that we don't really spend enough time on. And it's stuff that's really, really fascinating. And when I read this story, when I read your information from your publicist or whoever sent it to me, you know, I had studied the Kabbalah years ago, and I find it the whole thing a little complicated to me, but I'm fascinated by anybody who could really dig into it and understand it, you know, like you can. So let's start with the title of your book, which is called The Genesis Code, and it has a subtitle, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. So most of us assume that Genesis is a religious text, right, about a relationship to God. So how is that connected to our hidden genius, and how does it help us develop that genius?
Yes. So first of all, let me tell you that Carlos Suarez, his name.
Damn it, I knew as soon as you said it, I'd be kicking myself.
He was French, but he grew up in Alexandria. So, and Suarez, I think it could be maybe Egyptian or maybe Spanish.
Now that you've said it, it sounds Spanish to me, but I'm not really sure.
Yes, and he was definitely a Kabbalist. He spent 40 years of his life regathering all the elements of the Kabbalah that had been dispersed. First of all, the Kabbalah, or the Kabbalah, doesn't matter how you pronounce it, has been around longer than the text of Genesis was written. No one really knows at this point. It is a code, and the text of Genesis is a coded text which can only be fully understood when it is studied through the code of the Kabbalah. And Carlos Suarez put all this information together in his book, which was published in America in 1973. The title is The Cipher of Genesis, The Key of the Kabbalah to the Scriptures, something like that was the subtitle. So he devoted most of his life to reinterpreting the Kabbalah, and then I devoted many years of my life, and still do, to deciphering this information because it is very difficult. However, its message is very simple. And the story in Genesis reflects this when you understand the code. Most of us have been indoctrinated to interpret Genesis as history, because that's how traditional religious organizations interpret Genesis. But the truth is that those interpretations really have no idea what this text is actually saying, because if you read the actual words of the text in the Garden of Eden portion of the story, it doesn't make any sense to look at it historically. It's all mythology.
Right.
I mean, you've got a man created from dust, and then a woman created from his rib, and then she talks to a snake. I mean, this is classic mythology, and yet it's traditional religious interpretations are trying to pass it off as history. Not only that, but the entire story of the Garden of Eden all takes place in one day, the seventh day. No one seems to even pay attention to that fact. But all of these are clues which reflect the information in the code. The number seven, for example, which is related to the seventh letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So let me back up just a little bit. The code uses what we recognize as the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and in the terms of the code, they are not referred to as letters. They're referred to as flame symbols, and the word flame is used because they represent different aspects of energy, which in this old tradition was always referred to as light. So flame refers to this light aspect of energy.
Okay.
These flame symbols which later became known as the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, have certain qualities, energetic qualities, which are not related to anything linguistic when perceived as elements of the code. The seventh symbol, Zayin, which also, the symbols also have numbers. And when the Kabbalah is studied, the Kabbalah, any way you want to pronounce it, when it's studied, you don't look at the symbols as alphabetic symbols which stretch from Aleph or A to Tate, what is the last letter? The 27th letter. They don't go in a long string like our letters do, ABC, right, clear through the 26th letter. They're studied on a chart that has three rows of nine symbols each, and each of those symbols has a number, and the numbers are not consecutive either in the traditional sense. The top row is 1 through 9, the middle row is 10 through 90, and the bottom row is 100 through 900. These numbers are allocated to the symbols for a very specific reason, and the code can be studied through the numbers or through the symbols or both. They're interchangeable. When the code is being presented on a piece of paper and written as text, it looks like words on a page if that's how they are made to appear. But the truth is that every single word in Genesis, and when I talk about Genesis, I'm only referring to those two first famous stories, the 6 days of creation and the Garden of Eden, which is chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4, up to verse 16. There's a long story of Genesis afterwards, which concerns Cain and who got married, and then Noah's story of the ark and all that. But my study was limited to only those first four chapters up to verse 16, which when you print it out on a piece of paper comes out to about 6 pages of written type. And I probably read those 6 pages more than 10,000 times. So I became very familiar with this text. And the code is embedded in the text very simply. What we perceive as regular words of text are actually acronyms. So imagine, like, say for imagine the words in the beginning, which are the first three words of Genesis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Those three words are actually 6 letters which form the first acronym. And they are those 6 letters are composed of the 6 symbols, Beit, Resh, Aleph, Shin, Yod, Tav, which are related to specific numbers. And that configuration of those 6 symbols, when studied through the Kabbalah and penetrated, and this took me 9 months to decipher just that one word, that one acronym. The first 5 months that I studied the Kabbalah, I was so overwhelmed with the massive amount of information presented to me that I realized I had to limit my study to a very small portion of text. So I chose this first acronym in the beginning, Beit Resh Aleph Shin Yod Tav. And I studied that, only that, for 4 months. And then I had this amazing, unbelievable breakthrough that where the letters, those symbols, those 6 symbols, showed me what they consisted of. And what they consisted of was, and imagine this now, it's called the seed of life. And the seed of life resembles a regular seed. In other words, it has germing elements and husking elements. And these two types of energy, which are in opposition, configure themselves to work together to create potential or opportunity or possibility. So the original definition of those six letters is more like in the beginning of the life that is at the center of the universe, there is an unimaginable creative energy which always manifests through whole systems and has the power to generate every life form imaginable. Now, that's a very simplified version of what I saw. What I saw can never be put into words. It was a massive revelation. The story that I tell in the book is that I felt as if giant hands reached out of the heavens and ripped my two hemispheres apart, and the entire universe rushed in all at once. That's what I saw. I saw all the laws of thermodynamics. I saw all the quantum laws that regulate the flow of electrons in atoms and the energy behind that. And all of it was produced through this pattern of wholeness which integrates two opposing types of energy which are most easily perceived by us through the model of a seed. So all of the acronyms in Genesis carry this pattern of wholeness, every single one. It's in every symbol. It's in every acronym. It's in every sentence. It's in every verse. It's in every chapter. It's in every story. This model of wholeness, of which the seed is the best model for us to think about, is penetrated into every element of this text. It's like a hologram. Each tiny little aspect of this text recreates the whole. And that's what these first six letters, these first six flame symbols, showed me.
So how did you get to the point of, how did you know, I don't even know how to begin to ask the question, actually.
Well, let me explain this.
Yeah, I don't understand what made you start looking for this. The whole story, how it all came to be, because this is remarkable, you know, and it's something that nobody else ever said that they saw, you know.
When I lived in the Christ Circle, which was a contemplative community, which I was drawn to as part of the path that led me there, which I didn't figure out until many, many years later. And in the Christ Circle, another person who lived there walked up to me one day and gave me a book and said, here, you might like this. And it was Carlos Suarez's book on the Kabbalah and in Genesis. And I was immediately drawn to it for no rational reason at all.
Okay.
And as I began my studies and got deeper into my studies, it made even less sense because I felt like I was just banging my head against the wall. I couldn't understand a word of it. It was so indecipherable that I was so frustrated. I wanted to throw it away every day, and yet something inside me just kept pushing me. And I never did understand that until I was in my 40s. And in my 40s, I realized that I had had two very profound experiences as a child, one when I was 5 and one when I was 11. And those two experiences planted a seed of intention in me. And I'll describe that if you want me to.
Sure, go ahead.
I describe those two stories in my book so that people can understand how I did get there and what drove me and the energy behind my ability to stick with this very complicated teaching beyond all rational reason. And it was when I was 5, it was an interesting day, but basically I heard a voice from a fire, and the voice said, things are not what they appear to be. It was a very clear voice. It wasn't my voice. And along with the voice was a feeling or an atmosphere or a mystical presence. It can be described in a lot of ways. For me, it was attention grabbing. It grabbed my attention and put me in a completely different dimension. Even though I was simply a 5-year-old child standing in front of a fire, that voice went straight through me and energized every one of my cells. Now, at 5 years old, I had no way understanding that, of putting that into words, of making any kind of meaning out of it at all.
Right.
It was only later, as an adult, that I could look back on that and have any kind of sense of what that was. I never told anyone about it, and it didn't play a big part in my everyday life. But it was an experience. I actually did forget during my teenage years, but I later remembered as an adult, and once I remembered it then, I never forgot it.
Right.
Then I had an experience when I was 11, which was very profound, and it was built on this first experience. I had been searching for a year for an adult who displayed clarity. Now, I didn't know this consciously because I didn't have the ability to consciously form that concept. But as an 11-year-old child, what I understood is that the world didn't make any sense. It was crazy. And all the adults around me were as indecipherable as everything else. No one seemed to have any point of wisdom, including my parents. And I was actively searching for an adult who could explain this to me. And everywhere I turned, I discovered that that everyone was caught up in some kind of delusional thinking that clouded their judgment, and they couldn't offer me anything. And I was in deep despair at the age of 11 because I somehow intuitively understood that if I couldn't find an adult model who could teach me about clarity, I was going to be lost just like everyone I knew. And that scared me way more than the preacher at church who told me I'd go to hell if I didn't believe in Jesus.
Right.
Because his were just words. They didn't really have any meaning to me. But my fear of being lost in an awareness that didn't make any sense was very deep and profound. And during this search, I had eliminated several possibilities, starting with my parents, then my teachers, then the church leaders. And on the day that I left my church service and said, well, I'm never going back there. That person obviously has no idea what I'm looking for and can't help me find it. On my way home from church that day, I simply found myself walking on a strange path. And, of course, later I realized this was some sort of a vision that I had. But at that time, I didn't know it was a vision. I just happened to be there. And I met a mystical figure, which to me looked like Jesus. It looked exactly like the picture of Jesus on my Sunday school room wall. And the entire experience was telepathic. There weren't any real words, but there was very deep meaning. And during this revelation or visitation or opening, as I refer to it now, Jesus and I had this very deep communication. And he showed me these different parts of myself that, as he showed them to me, they awakened and went, oh, wow, he's right. Yes, that's exactly what I'm experiencing. And at the end of this experience, I realized that the reason Jesus was able to show me all these things was because he could see them, because he had developed this clarity that I was seeking. And all of a sudden I realized that if I didn't do something very quickly in this moment of opportunity, this moment was going to end, and all I was going to be left with was the memory of it, and that was it. So I said to Jesus telepathically, teach me to see the way you do, because that's what I want to learn. I don't want to just have this experience. I want to make this experience my entire life. And so he said, sure, I'll do that. And then it was over. And I was standing on the sidewalk. Now, for many years, I wondered why the experience ended so abruptly as soon as he said yes. But in my 40s, when I looked back on this and realized that this was part of what led me to the Kabbalah and kept me grounded enough to keep studying it, I realized that that experience planted an intention in my subconscious for this desire for clarity. And right. that intention was so strong, even though I didn't recognize it, even though I had no idea that that's what happened, it was so strong it provided its own energy field. And that energy field wrapped itself around that book by Carlos Suarez and just would not let me go, literally kept me focused on that book long enough to receive the information that was in it. I knew that since that's what it took for me, nobody else would be able to study this kind of material if they didn't have that kind of push behind them. So I had to figure out a way to present this material to others who didn't have this other dimension inside of them that would hold them to it long enough for them to get the information. And I wrestled with that for 30 years until I was able to write my first attempt at it. And then that wasn't good enough, so I worked another 10 years to come up with this current book, The Genesis Code, to try and make this information accessible. And I was much more successful with this book than I was with my previous book. So that's the short and long story of how I was drawn to the Kabbalah and what made me stick with it long enough to get the information out of it.
So what is the purpose? I mean, why did there need to be a code at all?
First of all, what's
the purpose of the code?
The purpose of the code is to actually awaken very specific potentials in the human brain that can't be awakened any other way. Now, that's for people who really want to delve into this code and study it like I did. There's another level, though, that anyone can approach, and that's the level that I want to tell people about, because it is all about the human brain. And since all of us have a human brain, it behooves us to understand as much as we can about the brain. And what the code told me about the story of the Garden of Eden is that whole story takes place within our brain and awareness and consciousness. It is the story of how we awaken. We are Adam and Eve. And the Adam and Eve represent two types of intelligence in our brain and psyche. One is masculine and intellectual, and the other one is feminine and intuitive, Adam and Eve. And
right.
the masculine intellectual information processing mechanisms in the brain are very limited. And in our culture, they are conditioned to perceive life through the lens of duality, which in the story is referred to as the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the reason that imagery is so powerful in the story and why everyone remembers it and refers to that is because all the trees of knowledge in the Garden of Eden are the neurons in our own brain. The word dendrite, which most people are familiar with now as the tip of a neural tree, comes from a Greek word that means tree. And neurons in the brain look like trees, not exactly, but the iconography of a tree is also the iconography of a neuron. In other words, a neuron has a central axon which looks like a trunk. From the axon, branches branch off. So imagine, say, an oak tree in the middle of winter without any leaves. You see this central trunk, and then thousands of branches branch off, and they keep branching and keep branching, and then there's all these little tips along the outer edges of the branches. And for a neuron, all those little tips would be the dendrites. And every single neuron in our brain can have up to 30,000 dendrites, and there are up to 100 billion, with a B, neurons in our brain. And every neuron in our brain is connected to all the other neurons in our brain through these dendritic connections, so that the number of possible connections between the neurons in our own brain is more than stars in the universe.
Wow.
So it gives you an idea of the complexity of this 3 pounds of tissue that each of us carries inside of our skull. Now, I learned all this from Genesis in the 1970s, and then later in the 90s, as I began reading scientific articles, all the neuroscience I read validated what I had learned from the Kabbalah and Genesis in the 70s. So not only does our brain have all these neurons and dendrites and neural pathways which carry information, which is knowledge, so the trees of knowledge in Genesis refer to the neural pathways in the brain through which all neural impulses travel to give us the impression of awareness and consciousness and our everyday life. That's how they work. And that's why they're called in the garden. And this is amazing, too. It's called the Garden of Eden. Well, it's because the reason it's called a garden is because of this resemblance to seeds and plants and trees and neural pathways. So how do scientists define our neural garden? They refer to it as a jungle, a neural jungle, because
right.
All the branches are intertwined. So garden and jungle carry the same metaphor.
Right.
And the brain can grow new neurons continually and constantly. And our brains are doing this all the time. And so scientists refer to that process as neurogenesis. So the information in Genesis is about the human brain. And it tells us that each of us has this amazing instrument in our brain that not only processes all the information of our everyday life, but just as you have experienced and perhaps your show is based mostly on this, it also processes a lot of information that science doesn't even recognize, like your intuitive responses.
Right.
There's a part of our brain that acts as a receiving mechanism, and it receives information from the energy in the universe that we can't process through our intellect. We can only process it through our intuitive mechanisms. But science does hardly even recognize those two intuitive mechanisms. And yet you do, and most of us have intuitive experiences. And the Garden of Eden story includes that part of our brain too. So to me, this is a fascinating story about us. And it teaches us that our brain is this fabulous, almost magical tool that can help us, if we know how to work with it, become all the things we want to become and create a life for ourselves that is the kind of life we long to live, and even after that, help us create the kind of society we want to live in.
So is that why you talk about, because the Kabbalah is really thought of as being
from what I remember about, well, from what I've studied about it, it's kind of like a mystic, kind of a mystical thing, but, you know, or esoteric or, you know, something along that lines, but you actually consider it practical. Is that why, I mean, what you're saying there and, you know, what you're just talking about?
Yes, because the Kabbalah is about energy, and everything in the universe first comes from energy. Energy is the first manifestation. Matter is derived from energy, and that's exactly what Einstein told us. E equals mc squared. So in learning the code of Kabbalah, I learned to see everything in terms of energy, and specifically through this pattern of energy that we see in a seed. A seed is composed of these opposing energies of germ and husk. This pattern is always the same. The germ is an inner, disruptive, growing, changing element, and the husk is an outer, static, continuous element. And that's exactly what you see when you look at these two stories in Genesis through this model. The Genesis 1, the 6 days of creation, is the story of our own evolution. And if you actually read the words and read the story, it's the same story that science tells. First there was the Big Bang, let there be light. Then there was a big void, and because this is our evolution, it goes to the earth. And first the earth was void, and then it divided into the planet and the atmosphere, and then the planet was covered with water, and then the land appeared, and then plants, and then animals, and then human beings. And there's birds in the sky and fish in the sea. And all these elements in Genesis 1 are recognizable. They're everyday elements. Then you move to Genesis 2 in the Garden of Eden, and suddenly you don't have these recognizable elements anymore. You've got this man made from dust and a woman made from his rib, and he's asked to name all these animals and looking for her, and then he's told not to eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I mean, and this is passed off as history, and yet nobody's ever going to find a seed to plant that kind of a tree in any nursery or hardware store, and that was never going to be true, and it will never be true, because this is not a story from the past. This is now the inner story of the human awareness of the creature that was created on the sixth day. And the seventh, and these days are not actual days. When you study the Kabbalah, those six, what are called days, in the code determine and define the properties of the first six symbols in this coded system. And then the seventh day is all about the seventh symbol. And the seventh symbol is very important because it contains and preserves all the elements of fertility, which today we refer to in terms of opportunity and possibility. And in terms of the brain, scientists call it neuroplasticity, because all the neurons in the brain are capable of changing. They can change their connections, and information can then go on new pathways. And that's what happens every time we have an aha moment. What has happened is that the brain has reconnected into a new configuration. The neurons have reconnected into a new configuration, so the information travels on a new way and reaches a new destination. All of a sudden we go, aha! And we perceive something that has been in front of us a long time, but we hadn't perceived it that way before.
Right.
So that's just one example of how flexible our perception is. And the entire story in the Garden of Eden is all about perception. And this relates to the very first message I got from the voice from the fire that said, things are not what they appear to be. And then I asked Jesus to teach me how to see. So my whole journey has been about learning about the brain's methods of perception and mechanisms of interpretation, and understanding that this is what the story of the Garden of Eden is about, and this is where all our hidden genius is. It is in our ability to expand our mechanisms of perception and awareness until we get to the place where we realize that everything is energy and that all energy works in whole systems. So there is no good or evil.
That was what I was going to ask you, is that you link awareness and genius like as being this, pretty much the same thing, and you're saying that this is why, because you know what you're describing
the brain,
about.
Yes, because the brain is capable of this, and because the brain is capable of this, this is the human pathway. The human pathway means we have this brain, this fruitful neural body that is capable of literally uncountable possibilities and opportunities. And because we have this inside our brain, this kind of a mechanism, that potential calls to us. It wants to create a path to itself for us to recognize and realize our own potential for full awareness, which means, in our culture, overcoming the culture of duality that we're raised in, to realize that all of that is delusion and illusion, and that we can learn to see through these eyes of clarity that point us to the fact that love, which is unity, is the only real, valid state of reality.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Until we get there, we're not happy. Because if you can't live a life of happiness in duality.
Right.
It's just impossible. So what happens in the story is Adam is supposedly given a commandment not to eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But if you read the words, it doesn't say that. The commandment is in the previous verse, and it says, and so Adam is commanded to eat of every tree in the garden. But then the next verse is just a warning. It says, but if you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will die. And in fact, it says, you will surely die. And then in the very next verse, it says, it's not good for Adam to be alone. He needs a helpmate. So Eve is created with this very involved process involving his rib. Now, interestingly, she does only one thing in this story. She eats that fruit first.
Right.
And then she gives it to him, and then he eats it, and then something happens that has been overlooked by every traditional translation that has ever been told for 2,500 years. And what happens was part of my path because it relates all to perception. The words say they ate the fruit and their eyes were opened. So see, in the story it said, if you eat this fruit, you will die. Then it says you need a helpmate. And what that helpmate does is eat the fruit and transform it. And the reason she transforms it is because she realizes, wait a minute, this isn't the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And if you study the words good and evil through the code, you find out something astonishing. When I discovered this, I literally fell off my chair. I was sitting, you know how you sit in a chair at a desk and you put your feet up on the desk and you rock back in the chair and you're balanced on the back two legs of the chair? Well, when I actually got the meaning of the words good and evil, I was so excited, my legs pushed on the desk and I toppled backwards off the chair. And I landed, you know, on the floor with my head banging on the floor. And when I, you know, that was a very startling situation. But what happened in my mind when I realized that these words, good and evil, had been mistranslated so badly, I was just astonished. Because what happens is that when you translate the word good down to its components of the Kabbalah, they refer to a static state, a state that doesn't change. But when you translate the word, the symbols in the word evil, it translates into a dynamic, disruptive state, like a germ. So here in the words good and evil, again, are that same model of the seed, germ and husk, but they're reversed. The good static element is the element that we need to burst through, just like a germ bursts through a husk. And the disruptive element is the element we need to embrace. It's not evil. It's been perceived as evil because of its disruptive nature. And that's exactly what Eve discovers. She discovers that this is not the knowledge of good and evil. This is the knowledge of wholeness. And that we need to embrace disruption. And so she says, here, Adam, this is exactly what this is. Eat it. You'll see it for yourself. So he eats it, and oh, yeah, they see it, and their eyes are opened to this truth of wholeness that pervades life and the brain. So she...
It's so interesting to listen to you talk about this, because this is like, still after, you know, how many years have you been doing this, you're still very, very excited about it. Like, you know, like it's still like so new or in a way.
So exciting. I mean,
yeah.
The traditional interpretations that we have been laboring under for 2,500 years are so wrong. And the real information in this text is so exciting. Anybody who recognizes it would be like me.
Right.
I mean, it's just the most exciting kind of information I can imagine, because it tells you exactly how you free yourself from all the misguided cultural information that bombards you. And the way you do it is by going inward and becoming fully aware within your own mind, seeking clarity. That's how we all awaken to becoming fully human. And you talked about in the very beginning when you were introducing your show, you talked about your last guest being the angel lady.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I discovered by reading Genesis and by understanding fully the message in the Garden of Eden story is that to be human is to actually be angelic. That's what human nature is. Most of us running around, especially political leaders, are so far away from that reality. They are behaving not like humans, but they're behaving like subhumans. Because to be human is to be cooperative. It's to be highly social and sensitive to others. It's to be kind and generous, to be helpful. These are the true qualities of our human nature. And that's all in the Garden of Eden story too. But see how that's been twisted by traditional interpretations who say Eve is a sinner.
Right.
Now, if you go back and read that text, there's nothing in that text that refers to Eve as a sinner. Nothing. Not one word. And yet all of us have been indoctrinated with this idea that she is the original sinner, that she disobeyed, because they don't even recognize the fact that Adam was never even given that commandment. That wasn't a commandment. That was saying, if you eat this tree, you will die. What people don't understand is that in the context which that warning was given, he was alone. And if he did eat that fruit from the tree of duality alone, he would die. And the word that word die, when it's translated into the Kabbalah, actually means rigidity. And it's referring to a static consciousness that doesn't grow. And I've learned to refer to that as rigor mortis of the mind. Because that's what happens to the intellect when it processes information without input from our intuitive faculties. They do die in the sense that they become rigid. And in the context of the story, rigidity is equal to death because it doesn't have any of the qualities of life, which is flexibility. So when Eve eats this fruit, she turns it back around and says, wait a minute, this isn't going to kill you. This is going to be your birth if you embrace these disruptive, flexible qualities. So she represents those aspects in our brain that are alive and flexible and changeable, intuitive and creative. And she because she has these qualities, she saves him from his tendency to be rigid, which is what the intellect tends to do.
Right.
So as I'm reading this story through the Kabbalah, through the lens of the Kabbalah, I'm seeing myself. I'm seeing how my own awareness works. And I'm realizing this text is teaching me about these other qualities that I have that I can tune into and strengthen so that they become dominant. And by the way, the default mechanism in our brain that is the most powerful is the fear mechanism. But through the frontal lobe, which Eve represents, we can become aware of the power of love, of unity, of wholeness. And that power is the only power that can be stronger than our fear mechanisms. But in order for that to happen, we have to engage those powers within ourselves. We have to become whole within ourselves. And the only way we can do that is love every single aspect of ourselves. And that's the only way we can love others.
You can't love anybody else. Are you teaching people to do that? Are you explaining how to do that? I mean, in your book, is that here you're explaining the basics of how, you know, you developed it or how you figured it out, how you decoded it basically. And do you talk about how when you wrote your book, we can interpret this code and awaken ourselves to this other awareness and then make ourselves, you know, be at that, you know, unlock that hidden genius that you talk about.
Right. So as I'm dealing with all this and I have all this knowledge and I'm trying to think of, okay, how do I help others attain this too? And I realize that not everybody can study the Kabbalah. It's just too intense. So, and up until a year ago, I had no idea really how to pass this information on other than write the book and get some conversation started. But as I began to think about it, I realized that along the way, I had developed some methods of my own that were very helpful. So if your listeners go to my website, which is www.thegenesiscode.com, I have a little booklet titled Seven Techniques to Cultivate Your Genius. And they are simply little techniques that I developed during my pathway that helped me become more aware and maintain my awareness in a state of clarity. And I'm just beginning to learn how to work with people and do that. This will be the next step in my pathway. So you can go to the website, you can, I'm a little bit not very tech savvy, and so I'm trying to figure out how to get my website to work well in order for people to download this little booklet. But the booklet is actually on the website itself under a page. I think the page is, I'm going to try to look at my website right here. I think the page is called, there's one page called Events. Oh, the details. I think it's under the details. Yes, it says the Genesis Code Workbook. And all the information that is in this little booklet that I created, Seven Techniques to Cultivate Your Genius, is under this tab called the Details, which turns out to be the Genesis Code Workbook.
So I know you touched on this before.
Yeah. So then another thing, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt again, but I am trying to create a list of people that would be interested in like a webinar that I would like to produce in January, where we will talk about these techniques and find ways to incorporate them into our everyday life so that we can awaken all these elements in our brain that help us expand our awareness and maintain our clarity. So I'm working on that too, yes. So the point is, you don't have to learn the Kabbalah to become clear.
Right,
but
right.
If you want to be happy and healthy and whole and human, you do have to become clear. And there are a thousand ways to accomplish this because the brain is so flexible, more than a thousand, uncountable. But here's the thing. The first requirement is intention. You have to want clarity more than you want anything else. You have to really want it because the powers of distraction in our culture are so powerful that if you don't want clarity more than anything else, you won't be able to withstand those distractions.
Right.
And, of course, that was the first lesson I learned about this information in Genesis was the power of intention. And it turns out intention is located in the frontal lobe, the part of the brain that makes us human.
Makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, and like I was saying earlier, you touched on this before when we were talking earlier, but do you think that the Kabbalah and you know, the code and all of these things that we've been talking about, do you think that has something to offer neuroscience?
Oh, I know it has something to offer neuroscience because I learned all of this about the brain in the 70s, which the neuroscientists are just discovering now. And I learned way more. I mean, neuroscience isn't even close. Isn't even close to what the Kabbalah reveals about the brain. I mean, there's a few neuroscientists who are kind of heading there, but most of them don't have a clue. The nature of the brain is astonishing. And each of us has this, it's like a treasure chest. Each of us has the potential to become who we long to be. The wonderful, creative, happy, productive, intelligent, fun person we want to be.
Right.
We all have that power. If we can just learn how to harness it from our own brain.
It sounds so simple, and, you know, to think that it's just sitting there. It's just like
it is. It's sitting right there.
For us to open the door. Hey, all right, I'm right here, you know.
You get it. All of these things come through clarity. Every single one of them. It's all about perception and interpretation in the brain. So if you want clarity, clarity will bring you everything else. Because what clarity does is show you the difference between reality and cultural delusion and illusion. Most of us don't know the difference. Most of us don't understand that we've been raised in a culture that does not disseminate true information. Our culture lies to us every day, every minute, every second about who we are.
Yeah.
And when we desire clarity and when we go after clarity, we begin to see the lies and delusions and illusions of the culture that conditioned us, like Bob Dylan's old song. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Right.
In order to attain clarity, we have to face the conditioning we've all been subject to. And we've all been subject to it. We can't help it. That is the nature of the brain. It responds to stimulus. And the stimulus our brains have responded to is the cultural conditioning within which we were raised. So all of us are in this boat together. And the only way out is to seek clarity. It's clarity that pulls us into the truth of energy and wholeness and light and love and teaches us how to discern the difference between reality, which is unity and love, and illusion, which is duality and good and evil. And within reality are all those angelic, intuitive, helpful energies that promote our personal growth.
Makes a lot of sense. It actually does. I mean, it really does make sense. It's, you know, when you think about, I mean, it's deep. It's definitely deep, but it also makes a lot of sense too. And
practical. That's what I mean by practical.
Right. Right.
I discovered is that what we think of as spirituality is really just being human. We human beings have been taught for so long that we're sinners, that we're only constructed of matter, which is the biggest lie that science tells, that we're limited in so many ways. We've been subject to that kind of conditioning for so long that most of us have no idea the treasure chest of opportunities and possibilities right inside our skull. So that's why, I mean, it's practical. This is about becoming who we long to be. And who we long to be is fun, creative, happy, healthy. And healthy means sustainable. In fact, the word health, you know what the word health is derived from? A German word that means whole. And of course, the human body, and I know you've experienced this if you're a medical intuitive, the human body is a whole system. And all it ever seeks to do is maintain its wholeness. When we get sick, all it means is that some part of this whole system has degraded out of wholeness into some kind of separation. And all we have to do is get rid of that separation, get ourselves back into wholeness, and we're healed. We're healthy because that's our natural state.
Right.
And the interesting thing with me, as I learned the Kabbalah and as I applied all these things to myself, I didn't seek health, but I became healthy. It was like first I went after clarity, and the clarity demanded that I be healthy. It literally went that way. That's how I quit smoking. I didn't go out to start quit smoking. I was happy smoking. But I got so clear that one day I took a puff of a cigarette and almost died hacking. I was hacked like the very first time when you're a teenager and you take a drag of a cigarette because of all the toxins going into your body. And then later you get addicted and you're smoking and you don't pay attention to those toxins. Well, what happens as you get clear, the way I describe the metaphor is like, think of a mountain stream that has become polluted with pesticides and trash and, you know, all kinds of nasty stuff. And then think of all people all getting together and cleaning up all the trash, and then the stream runs clear again. Well, once the stream runs clear, any part of toxicity or an unhealthy part that goes into that stream is then really easy to see. And so then it can be removed again. Well, that's what happens when you become clear. When you become clear that the toxic elements in your environment suddenly become very recognizable, and you can't help but respond appropriate to them. So one day I took a drag of a cigarette and almost died coughing.
Right.
And that had never happened to me before.
So getting healthy was just a side effect to basically, you know, what was going on. Yeah.
Getting healthy was the side effect of being clear.
Right.
I didn't have to push myself to be healthy. I simply became healthy because my clarity demanded it. My clarity basically said, hey, I'm clear. I'm not going to hang out in an unhealthy body. Get it together.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. That makes a lot of sense. We need to go to a quick commercial break, and then I want to give you some time to anything that we didn't cover that you want to talk about when we get back, and you know, and how people can get in touch with you and find your book and all those good things. So if just everybody hang in there for a minute. We're just going to be right back after this commercial break.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network, tune in to host Daria Ann for RightStream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. RightStream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. RightStream Tuesday with Daria Ann, Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the RightStream Radio Network.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. We are back. You are listening to Just Believe Radio.
on the Right Stream Network, like those commercials didn't say that 1,000 times. But I just wanted to reintroduce quickly Glenda Lee Hoffman, who is my guest today. And we are having a fascinating discussion about the Genesis Code and her book, which is called The Genesis Code, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. And, you know, it's so fascinating because I think of the Kabbalah as being the most complicated. I don't remember if it was my bachelor's program or my master's program where I had to study it. I wanted to pull my hair out. I was just like, please, God, let this end. let me just pass this course. And it was, oh, my gosh, I thought it was so difficult. And then I hear about these people, I mean, a lot of even celebrities and things, that base their lives on the studies of the Kabbalah. So it's fascinating, and there's obviously a lot to it. And I want to make sure before we end the show, Glenda Lee, that we have a chance to, you have a chance to, you know, cover anything that we might have missed about this, because it is, I mean, to me, and I'm sure to a lot of the listeners, it is a complicated subject. And when you think about, you know, I mean, you think about studying the Bible, that there's some complicated issues to that, you know, just understanding some of that. So when you add the Kabbalah to it, I think it even gets a little, you know, a little more complicated and adds another twist to it. So I don't want the listeners to miss out on your bottom line message here that you're talking about in your book.
Lisa, I want to thank you so much for having this conversation. It's been really fun. And I want to tell your listeners that, yes, the Kabbalah is very complicated, but I'm trying really hard to break it down so that people don't have to study as hard as I did to get the benefit of it. And that's what I've tried to do with my book, and I do have another book planned that will go a little bit deeper with that. But for now, what I want to offer your listeners is, first of all, reading the book is, I've made it as simple as I know how to make it. And there are a few complicated chapters in the book, but on the whole, the book is easy to read, and it does give the basic information of the Kabbalah without overwhelming you. It also introduces you, first of all, to the idea that the Garden of Eden is not about something that happened in the past to the first man and woman of the human race. It is about your human brain and how you can hone it as a tool to awaken your specific genius. All of us are blessed with this amazing piece of tissue in our skull, the human brain, that has amazing qualities that science is only just beginning to investigate. And yet we have had these qualities for at least 200,000 years since we became what is termed scientifically anatomically modern humans, which means we acquired the frontal lobe. It is the frontal lobe of the brain that makes us human. All the rest of the brain was acquired before we became fully human. And the story in Genesis is centered around the actions of Eve because she represents the frontal lobe. And the whole story with Cain and Abel doesn't have anything to do with Cain slaying Abel. Again, that is a perspective from the past, but in the perspective of these are mythological imagery representing actions in the human brain and psyche, Cain is the protector of Eve's agenda, and Eve is the frontal lobe. So Cain is her protector. He doesn't slay Abel. That's a mistranslation in the text. Abel basically dissolves because he is a rigid element that attempts to limit the creative qualities of the frontal lobe. And so, and that's why Cain is blessed and why he is protected sevenfold. Again, the number seven. So I want to assure your listeners that there is so much more to the story of the Garden of Eden than anyone can even imagine, because it's a story about the human brain, and no one will ever discover everything about the human brain, because the nature of the brain is change. And that's what we have come here to do. We have come to change ourselves from pre-human, subhuman behaviors, concepts, and thoughts to fully human thoughts, which are much more similar to what we think of as angelic. That what we think of as angelic nature is actually human nature. That's our true human nature. And all of us actually want to be that way, because that's the it's the most fun way to be. So if you
right.
go to my website, thegenesiscode.com, you can go to the contact page and send me an email, and I'll create a list from this email, and I'm offering a four-week webinar seminar in January. I think it's four Wednesdays in January, which we'll just get on the phone and we'll talk about. It'll be a group of people, and if you sign up for the webinar, you get a free PDF of my book, as well as the booklet that I've created, Seven Techniques to Cultivate Your Genius. We'll talk about how we move towards clarity, because clarity is what brings us everything else. Clarity is what opens our mind. It's what allows us to become enlightened. In fact, I think enlightenment and clarity are the same thing.
I agree. Yep. Yep. I totally agree.
Clarity is what leads us to discovering a healthy lifestyle. So I haven't been sick in the past 25 years. Not because I've been trying to be healthy, but because I'm trying to be clear. And it's my clarity that has led me to healthy practices.
Right.
By showing me the difference. I mean, who wants to be unhealthy? It's no fun.
Nope.
Being healthy
nope.
is being energized, is having the energy to do what you want to do, and having the things that you do be productive and give you the kind of feedback that makes you feel good.
Right.
So these are the kinds of things we want to do as human beings, because the feeling of being fulfilled and being healthy and being clear is a treasure. And what I've discovered is that we can live in this state almost every minute of every day, and it makes living fun and exciting. So why wouldn't you want to be this way? And it is very practical. There's nothing woo-woo or airy-fairy about it.
Right.
This is what it means to be fully human.
Well,
we came here to have fun.
Right. And I love the fact that you've taken a very complicated subject, you know, and a complicated practice and simplified it, you know, quite a bit too in your book, because that's, you know, when I was studying it, I knew that there was a lot that I could learn. There was a lot there. There was, you know, some amazing information in the Kabbalah, and I just, you know, for me, studying everything else I'm studying to get a master's degree in metaphysical science, I'm just like, wow, this is just overkill. I can't deal
with
it.
I can understand that.
Yeah, it was definitely. So I love the idea of somebody actually making it a little simpler and telling us the basics of, you know, you don't have to break it all down. Guess what? I already did that for you, and that's what you're doing. You know,
yeah,
my
intention is to try to make this as accessible as possible to as many people as possible, because this is a code for the brain that helps our brain help us. That's what it's all about. We want to be fun, healthy, happy, creative individuals. That's what we came here to do. We didn't come here to be depressed and anxious and
right.
confused,
right.
which is what we end up being because
right.
that's what our culture conditions us to be. So we want to overcome our conditioning through clarity so that we can be who we want to be. So
right.
if you're interested in that, go to my website and go to the contact page and send me an email, and we'll work on that.
All right. So I just everybody knows Glenda Lee Hoffman's website is www.thegenesiscode.com, and you actually have offered on there, according to my notes, 7 techniques for cultivating your genius.
That's free.
Right. So that's another free giveaway you offer on there.
My book is available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon, and you can also buy the book on my website. And the book is reasonably priced.
Okay. Yeah, and I know you've got things that you've talked about, you know, coming up. You know people that you're talking about getting this Kabbalah course together. Which is awesome. You've got a 6-week course if one interested in improving their learning, how to harness the brain's innate genius to expand awareness. You've got a lot of things going on, so I want to encourage everybody to definitely visit thegenesiscode.com and learn more Glenda Lee Hoffman's work, and definitely get a copy of the book, The Genesis Code, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. I haven't had a chance, and I would love to be able to read everybody's book before I interview them, but I never, ever. I'm always behind. I just can't read as fast as I interview people. So, I end up reading it later. I get, like, some excerpts from it, and I learn the basics of it, and then I get it, but I'm definitely going to download it for me personally, because I think, you know, like I said, anybody that can take something as complicated as that and make it make sense for the rest of us, you just totally saved me a lot of headache and a lot of time. So definitely encourage everybody. There's amazing things to be learned in the Kabbalah, and I know that. So I really encourage everybody to take a look at that. And learn what it's about, and you won't be sorry. So I really appreciate you being on the show, Glenda Lee. It was a great show. I really enjoyed it, and I will definitely be keeping up with what's next for you and your next book. When's your next book due out? Have you started it yet?
No, all I have is the title.
But
that's how I start. I start with a title, and the title becomes my container, like a husk. And I do know what it's going to be filled with, and it is going to be fascinating. It's going to be even more fascinating than this book, I can tell you that. But I don't want to give the secret out yet because it's too exciting.
All right. Well, we'll have you back on the show when you're ready to tell us that secret. How's that?
Oh, sure. Lisa, you have been a wonderful host. I want to say that, and I certainly hope that your audience appreciates you.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice. That's very kind of you to say. I really appreciate, you know, everybody listening and sticking with my eclectic taste in stuff, you know. I mean, sticking with the show is you're going to get a little bit of everything under the metaphysical umbrella, like I say, and, you know, it's a big umbrella. So I appreciate all the listeners.
I was listening to your introduction, and I might tune in for that. Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun show. I'm really excited about it. It's going to be, I mean, just a kickback, funny, laughing kind of, you know, naughty. We're not focusing on spirituality or authors or, you know, any of the things that are any of our personal niches, but we're going to just go for, you know, just women's issues and things that women that are, you know, affect women. And I think it's going to be a really great show. I'm really looking forward to it. That starts on November 29th, so definitely listen to that. It'd be great to get your feedback on that.
Okay. I'll put it on my calendar.
All right. Great. Thanks, Glenda Lee. I really appreciate your being on. And
my
I will
pleasure.
Definitely see you again soon.
And thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. So we have, that was Glenda Lee Hoffman, thegenesiscode.com. Please visit her website and check out her book, The Genesis Code, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. It's available on Amazon and also through her website. So check that all out. Great show, really, really interesting stuff. Every week, Just Believe Radio airs now at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we, like I said before, have lots of interesting subjects and guests and experts in lots of different fields. Don't forget to check out my webpage. My webpage is www.lisatarvis.com, L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S. You'll find links to my Facebook pages, because I've got a couple of them, my Twitter account, my LinkedIn account, and links where you can buy my book, Just Believe, or learn more about my book called Just Believe. Until next time, everyone, next Sunday again, 7 o'clock, another new and exciting guest that I will be announcing maybe tonight. I don't know. Not right now, but, you know, I have to keep it a secret. Maybe tonight or tomorrow. We'll see. But you'll get some information. So follow me on Twitter, follow me on Facebook, and check out my website so you can keep up with who I've got coming on when. So we've got some great, great shows. I'm booked up all the way through February already. So I've got some really fantastic guests coming up for Just Believe, and we've got some great shows coming up for Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, too. So don't forget to check out the other hosts on the Right Stream Network and to visit the Right Stream Network's homepage, which is rightstreamradio.com. And my webpage, again, lisatarvis.com. Great show. Thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you next week again, next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Bye, everyone.